Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 212th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Saeed Eastman. He and his family moved from Tangier, Morocco, to Springvale, Maine when he was 11 years old. He studied government and economics at Colby College, and Saeed has been called everything from regional manager, director, advisor, vice president, to founder. Currently, Saeed is the CEO of the national job search website called Jobs in the U.S. That organization also has a state-specific site called Jobs in Maine for local employers to be matched with the very best candidates, along with all kinds of additional free and career-related information. So we're super glad to have you here today, Saeed. Thank you for coming to New Mainers Speak.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me, and I'm really happy to be on your show.
Well, it's my pleasure on this gorgeous Sunday. You have lived and worked all over the world, and I wondered if you could tell us why you chose Maine. What brought you back here?
Well, you know, I think everybody has a reason that resonates on a lot of different fronts. And for me, it was a blend of the opportunity, and it was the right time for the opportunity. And Jobs in ME was part of a large network of sites. And I thought, you know what, this is a great opportunity to work in Maine. The other is it also brought me close to my family in Maine.
Yes, and you grew up in Springvale.
Yes, a big change from Tangier, Morocco to Springvale. And I have to say that my first major snowstorm was quite interesting.
Yeah, so Springvale, for those of you who aren't York County people, is right next to Sanford. So it's pretty rural.
Well, back then it was rural. I think now with Sanford being a city, Springvale and Springvale being part of it, it's quite populous. 24,000 people or so. And I grew up in Sanford. I went to high school in Sanford. So now I go back, I feel a strong connection to the town. But also, I think having been raised there and having the influential years being in Springvale, it also has helped me stay connected to Maine. Because I still have some good friends there. I still have a lot of family that lives there.
And you still live in York County?
Yes, I have a lovely home in York County, and I'm very fortunate that I have also a home in Massachusetts, so I juggle lives in two states.
Well, luckily you have some expertise in juggling your life in two realms. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about the Morocco of your childhood and just about Morocco in general.
So it's Morocco as a country has had played a big part in my life, because I believe that my identity or my identifying with Morocco has shaped me into who I am today. The Morocco that I know is a multinational Morocco. It's a Morocco that has influences from Spain, from France, from Italy, from Great Britain, from America. The Tangier, Morocco, where I grew up, was an international zone. So it was never occupied. It was governed by many different embassies or emissaries from these countries. And as a result, the city itself offers a lot of international flavors. And also adds to why most Moroccans, specifically in Tangier, are multilingual. You will see Moroccans who speak Arabic as their primary language, but they'll speak French. But then at the same time, they have Spanish. Some of them speak Italian. Everybody speaks a little bit of English, if not a lot of English.
And it's important to note here that not only is Tangier, Morocco in Africa, but it's the furthest west place in Africa, northwest, and just south of the Strait of Gibraltar.
It's a lovely place. It sits at the mouth of the Mediterranean going into the Atlantic Ocean. It is Northwest Africa, not the Middle East, as a lot of people have a tendency to think of most Arab countries. It sits about 20 miles across the Straits of Gibraltar from Spain. I was just recently there, a half an hour ferry, and we were in Tarifa, Spain.
Do you consider yourself African?
I guess you could say I'm African because Morocco is an African country. I just consider myself Moroccan.
What about when your kids check the SAT box for which origins they're?
You know, unfortunately for them, there is no class benefit from identifying as Moroccan because most Moroccans are considered white Caucasian. So from that perspective, it really doesn't help. But I think it's important for me to pass on to my kids that they have to identify that they are part Moroccan. And that's important for them for a bunch of different reasons, is that it gives them a little diversity in their own line of thinking about who they are in this world. And they're not just, a lot of people identify with, I am either, you know, I'm Spanish or I'm Irish, but I think it's important for my kids and for other immigrant kids to identify with the culture that their parents identify with.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more too. I wondered, you've worked all over the world and you've done a wide variety of jobs. I wonder what you are enjoying about your current work. And if you could explain for us what jobsinme.com is all about.
So jobsinme.com is a job site. It matches employers and job seekers together. The quality of the candidates that we offer to employers that work with us is extremely high and very focused on the geography that the state site supports, which is jobsinme.com. What I love about it is the work that we do indirectly affects the lives of every family member that works, that gets their job through us. So an example, I always tell people that when somebody lands an opportunity on our site, there is celebration that happens. They go home and they tell their family that they have a job, they can make money, they can provide health care, they can support the family. And it's not, you know, it's not just a destination for people to find work, but it's a destination for people to start changing their life for the better. Because every opportunity is a way to make your life better.
Yeah, so contributing to the well-being of families throughout the state.
Absolutely. And, you know, we look at what we do, not altruistically. I mean, listen, we are a business. The nice part about it is this, is the only people who pay us for our services are employers. So job seekers or individuals can come and use our site freely. They can create profile on our site. They can create alerts so that they can determine, get, you know, feeds of what jobs they may be interested in. So that's the nice part about it, is individuals don't have to pay a thing to use our site.
Free to the consumer.
Free to the consumer.
And who are the consumers in general?
Well, we don't really keep track of the demographics of our individuals, of the members of our sites or people who register on our site. But generally, anybody who lives and currently works in Maine or anybody who has a desire to come and work in the state of Maine, specifically for jobs in ME, right? The fact of the matter is, it's a mix of people and there's lots of platforms out there, but there is that focus of geography. So we know for a fact that when somebody lands on our site, they're either looking for work in Maine, they live in Maine, or trying to transition to a new site. And that we do know. You know, we have roughly about 80,000 people using our site a month.
Wow, that's a lot of traffic.
It's a lot. It's a good amount of traffic for a site that's geographically focused. But I think the reason that is because we're not industry focused. So we cover all industries. So if you're looking for a job in manufacturing, that will be available. If you're looking for a job in healthcare, hospitality, any industry advertised on our site. We have people for seasonal work. We have people that advertise for landscaping, but it's a catch-all. But the nice part is it is local,
mm-hmm.
and it, so.
You mentioned this when we met last week and just talked about your website and when I got to see your workplace. And I went online and you had talked about the fact that there are many other offerings on there for free that are beneficial to people looking for jobs. And I enjoyed reading some of those articles about the big blunders people tend to make on a job interview or how to write a resume or how to present yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I think the nice part about what we do is we try to be a resource for both employers and job seekers. Employers have a tendency to use our site for the purposes of finding people. At the same time, job seekers or individuals need a coach or an advocate. While we can't give one-on-one coaching, we offer a lot of content that is relevant and pertinent to the process of searching for a job. So you can download articles on how to write a great resume, how to prepare yourself for a job search, how to figure out what a job fit looks like for you, how to dress for an interview, what type of questions you might interact during the process of looking for a job.
I thought that was really good.
And there's lots.
I like questions, though.
Right. I mean, the idea is to be an asset and to treat the job seekers in a way that they feel that there's somebody looking out for them. We're not just trying to put people together with companies, but we're trying to make sure that the people go in prepared so that they establish a long history for themselves in the career workforce and create a path for themselves that's successful.
Yeah, successful, real match.
Yeah. And for new immigrants, I think the most important part is this, is by creating a profile on our site, by working on our site, getting information about looking for a job, they will be able to find their first job. Then they'll be able to continue to look at the site, see whether opportunities come up and transition to new opportunities. You know, in order for growth, you need to have change, right? And I think that's something that's really important.
Well, and it goes along with having the tools for the change. And you talk about this first job, second job, but also you deal in human capital. I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about workforce development and help us understand what that means exactly, human capital.
So, you know, most companies measure themselves based on the assets that they have, you know, real estate, equipment, products they produce. But one of the biggest line items in most organizations is salaries and payroll. And with that comes people. So if that's the case, then one of your biggest assets is your human capital. It's the people in your organization. And so, you know, when I talk about human capital, I'm talking about what makes a company tick. Even, I mean, you know, we talk about robotics and artificial intelligence. Well, those are great things that are happening in the world, right? Making work easy. But even those machines need programming by humans. And so the idea of a human involvement in the jobs world is going to go on forever. We'll never get to a point where humans don't do anything. Humans have to make machines figure out what to do, whether it's design, whether it's welding, whatever that situation is, humans are it. I also am a firm believer in using the term human in what I do, because I think that recruiting has been, to some extent, dehumanized by software systems that have disintermediated the relationship between the job seeker and the employer. So humanizing recruiting and using the term human in what I do makes me feel good about what I'm trying to do, which is trying to say, break down the walls, open up conversations. Every candidate deserves an opportunity to have a conversation with an employer. They may not be the right fit now, but they may be the right fit down the road. And that is human decency. That is the ability to give somebody the time that they gave you by applying to an opportunity at your place.
I love that, because everyone wants to be seen. And you're saying appreciate the people that are coming to do the work you're hiring to do.
Yep. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, human capital, there's also the aspect of development, right? Encouraging your people to grow and be better, advocates for your organization, a better asset to your organization. And when I think of new immigrants, I think of things that they bring to the table. I think of the fact that they've already taken a risk and are here. And when they're here, they're hungry for growth. They're hungry for development. They bring a certain knowledge that is not part of what we do here. They also bring language skills that we don't have. They also bring cultural, experiential, from their home country. And those are things that are part of that human capital. Those become assets. If a company wants to go global and needs someone with a different language, the immigrant community is there to help. They can interpret. They can help with whatever the skill that's needed.
I think that's huge. And what I've learned from the people I've met is they're willing to work hard, do jobs that aren't favored by people who've been here a long time, and also work two jobs, work three jobs. They make it work.
Yeah, I think we've talked about immigrants as an asset to the state, and you know, we can't increase the population of the state by having the current residents just have babies, right? So we need to have a new influx of talent, a new influx of workforce to come into the state, and that becomes our immigrant community. But at the same time, it's our responsibility as businesses that are in the state to encourage these new immigrants and support these new immigrants by both understanding they've made this transition, being patient as they're acquiring languages, acquiring English as a language, translating skills that they've learned before to skills that they know now. And that takes a little bit of patience. I think sometimes I hear a lot of people say, well, you know what, it's too much of an investment to work with a new immigrant. But they say the same thing about veterans. They say, you know what, it's a lot of work to work with a veteran because, you know, I have to work with them when they go on leave. I have to work with them to translate their skills that they learned in the military to what I'm doing now. But the fact of the matter is, it still requires a little bit of effort on the part of the employer. And also that effort pays off. When that immigrant's successful, they pass on the news to their friends and family that they're succeeding in this place. That brings a whole new talent that allows people to immigrate back here and find new opportunities.
The reward is rich, and the benefit to the society of Maine is really clutch. You're in a keystone position there. When we are dwindling in population and we're receiving immigrants, that's the fix. And here they go, start with you at jobsinme.com.
It's a great starting site. I will say that we're not answer to everything, but it is a good place to come to when you're in Maine.
Great. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Saeed Eastman. He was born in Tangier, Morocco, and moved with his family to Maine when he was a boy. How has being foreign-born been an asset to you in your career, Saeed?
Well, I think one of the most important parts about being a foreigner in any land is what you bring to the table as an individual. I think for me personally, I've tried to stay connected to my country of birth. That doesn't take away from the country where I live, make my living, raise my children. But I think my identity as somebody that was born in Morocco has been instrumental to differentiating me in the work world. And I think it's also helped me stay connected to both cultures. I have one foot in the States, one foot in Morocco. It has encouraged me personally to stay and develop the language skills that I've had. I mean, the fact that I was born in Morocco and speak French, Spanish, and Arabic along with English has offered me the opportunities to travel in the Middle East on behalf of my employers in the past and in Europe. And all those things are extremely important to me, but also they're extreme. Those differentiators are important to my employer. And that's And that's something that I think new immigrants need to know and say, what assets do I currently have from an education perspective, from a cultural perspective, that can make me valuable to my employer?
Adaptability is an asset.
It is an asset. And you know what? I think changing, being able to adapt to cultures, being able to adapt to different companies. And, you know, when you land a job with any employer, that job is going to change. One day you are doing one thing and next day you're doing another. And how you adapt and change to those things. The beauty of it is this: new immigrants are already adapting. They've already made that first step to change because they've relocated themselves from where they were to this fine state. And I think that's a big step and a big differentiator.
I think so too. When we spoke before, you talked about assimilation, and I wondered if you had some insights that you'd be willing to share about assimilation in general. That assimilation often goes with the conversation about being an immigrant, and people have different thoughts about how much assimilating one should do.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting because when I talk about assimilation, I talk about the positive aspect of what it means to assimilate into a culture. It means that it's important for you to continue to identify with who you are while you are learning about the place where you're going to live and work. You're not here on vacation. You're here to build a life for yourself. And in order to do that, it's important to know how Mainers think. It's important to know what languages Mainers speak and get to that point, right? At the same time, assimilation is not just one directional. It's important for you as a new immigrant to educate people about where you're from. Because I think as much as you are assimilating into Maine, I think assimilation also is educating people about who you are now that you are in Maine. And what that means.
It's like adding a new spice to the spice rack.
That's
what do I do with cumin or
right.
You know, whatever.
I mean I think it's important that when I talk about assimilation, I always talk about the fact that it's an asset. Differentiate that how different you are is an asset. So you should take a look at what you bring to the table and just incorporate it into your day to day life. It doesn't mean that, you know, you should dismiss when somebody says you should learn to speak English, you should learn to speak English, but you should also maintain the connection to where you are. Nobody's saying forget who you are, where you came from.
That's really an important piece. I think in the 40s, in the 30s, in the state of Maine, 14% of all people here were foreign born. And the movement was drop where you're from, be here. I think the thought around that's changed a lot. Now it's save who you were and add on an addition to your home.
Yeah. I mean, when I went to high school in Sanford, as an example, I mean, you couldn't look at a class roster without seeing a Trench Montaigne or a LeBron or a Levike. So there was always somebody with a foreign name. So I wasn't much different than anybody else, you know, with a name like Saeed. So I felt like I was fitting in with all the people with French heritage.
Did you speak French when you came?
I had a foundation for French, but I was very fortunate in that because I had English under my belt already, Arabic was my first language. It was fairly quick for me to learn French and learn Spanish, and those were the languages that I maintained throughout high school and college. Whenever I had a free period, I would always add a language class to stay
cool.
Connected.
Yeah, up at Colby. One way you keep your identity is by celebrating Moroccan culture online. I so enjoyed your website called Morocco is Not the Middle East. It's yeah. Just a great title. How does this website promote cultural awareness, and why is that so important to you?
Well, it started off as a bit of a geography joke. When I say Morocco is not in the Middle East, and it's really not a website, it's a Facebook group, and I encourage people to go and join the group. It was really about articulating what I call Moroccan exceptionalism. We try to highlight things that Morocco has to offer, whether it's the beautiful landscapes, the oceans, Moroccan people, what, you know, Moroccan architecture, historical facts.
The oldest library in the world.
Yeah, the oldest library in Fez. Or, you know, I think we talked about briefly before the show about the exhibit that's happening at the Met in New York, and how the pavilion where the exhibit on Islamic artifacts was built by Moroccan craftsmen. And it was built from, the craftsmen were from a region, they were from throughout the Kingdom of Morocco. But the idea behind the website is really, or the Facebook group is really to promote things that are great about Morocco. We try to stay away from controversial items like politics and religion, and because I think we're already hearing plenty of that. We try to put things forth that are positive. And also, it's very family friendly. My kids are members. Other family members are on the group as well. And most of the stuff that you see is great images. I have a friend who's a photographer. She posts a lot of pictures up there. I have friends who put up videos, put up articles. There's 1,000 people following it, and it was just a random thing that we did, and it's kind of fun. It keeps us all connected.
I love how it does that. It's beautiful, and I was brought to tears by the artisans sculpting like crop circle designs into wood, into plaster. It's fabulously beautiful. Certainly an ancient and wise culture.
No, I appreciate you saying so. I mean, it's a great place, and I encourage people to go and join the group if they want to learn a little bit more about Morocco.
Thank you. Syed, you are a person with a lot of insight, and you mix that with hard work and keep coming up with new projects and ways of fully engaging with your life. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it and truly enjoyed it.
I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Syed has selected for us. Can you tell us why you chose this song?
I chose the song because the beginning of the song starts with some Moroccan instruments, and it's kind of a fun and upbeat song by an artist named Mano Choa, and it's called Clandestino.
Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena, correré mi destino para burlar la ley, perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel, pa' una ciudad del norte yo me fui a trabajar, mi vida la dejé entre Ceuta y Gibraltar. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino por no llevar papel, perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino, yo soy el quiebra ley. Mano negra clandestina, peruano clandestino, africano clandestino, marihuana ilegal. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley, perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel, argelino clandestino, nigeriano clandestino, boliviano clandestino, mano negra ilegal.
شوف اللي كده ما تيده ما تسد كده ما تسد الصوت شوف ده السمو الموج ما زي الكرابان ولا شيء نسمع شو موريتانيا بيجي معهم بشر جايزين رغدي عتر واحد هذا